Good morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Today is Tuesday, April 21st, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Forest conservation and commercial hemp production are on the table in Salem today.
Oregon gets a regional biodefense center to protect us from the chemtrails?
Could be. An animal rights activist, Daniel Andrea San Diego, has been added to the FBI's most wanted terrorist list.
Portland area weather, mostly sunny, highs in the 70s. Tonight, mostly clear, lows around 50. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny and high around 60.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. In Salem today, two bills are often running through the legislature. Both pieces of legislation look good. One is a long overdue forest conservation law, and the second would make commercial hemp production legal. To sort it all out for us is Samantha Chirillo of Cascadia Rising Tide. Good morning, Samantha. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Chris. I'm also with Forest Justice as well as Cascadia Rising Tide. And today, yes, I just attended a hearing that unfortunately is having a bad outcome for forests in terms of burning forests for energy and clear-cutting some state forests. It looks like that bill is going to have a bad turnout. But this afternoon at 3 o'clock, there are two hearings, one which would simply allow Oregon Board of Forestry to make conservation a priority for some state forest areas for recreation, for carbon storage. And that has there's a lot of hopefulness that that would pass, as well as a Senate bill, 676, which would legalize industrial hemp so we can remove this burden for fiber production from our forests. And hemp is more efficient, 4-to-1, than growing trees for fiber. So it makes good economic sense as well as environmental sense.
Plus, we're out of trees. And with rural unemployment now, I guess it's nudging up against 20%. We can't really afford to pass this up.
That's right. Our state forest, especially the Elliott State Forest, has a mature and old-growth forest and provides really important habitat and recreational, educational value for the communities around it, as well as water security. And at this time, we have global climate change, and if we keep cutting away at our maternal growth forests, we're going to see regional climate change as well, have very dire consequences. But today we have an opportunity, and I want to give people a number they can call their state legislators at 1-800-332-2313. And Ben Cannon and Jefferson Smith, I believe both from the Portland area, have an opportunity to vote on House Bill 3249 to conserve state forests for carbon storage. And I also want to give people the number for the Oregon Board of Forestry, which makes decisions about whether to clear cut or preserve state forests. Their number is 503-945-7200, and we need to ask them to halt all logging of mature and old-growth forests that is going to move forward in the Elliott State Forest within the next few weeks without us taking action.
So once again, it's Ben Cannon, Jefferson Smith. You can reach legislators at 1-800-332-2313. And the Oregon Board of Forestry, 503-945-7200. Now is the time to do it. You really can't afford to wait. We're not making forests like they used to. Thank you so much, Samantha. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris.
That was, of course, Samantha Chirillo of Cascadia Rising Tide. Liam?
Oregon's threatened species and their habitats got a $2.63 million lift yesterday from the U.S. Department of Interior. Oregon's most imperiled species, the northern spotted owl, the coho salmon, marbled murrelet, Oregon silver spot butterfly, and several wildflowers, could benefit from the grants awarded through the Cooperative Endangered Species Conservation Fund.
The Washington House passed a measure to add a $5 opt-out fee to annual vehicle registrations to help keep Washington state parks open. Majority Democrats say that it would not be a new tax because car owners could check a box on their tab forms to opt out of the fee. Tax lawmakers hope that the state could bring in more than $20 million for parks. The State Parks Commission has said it may have to temporarily close or transfer dozens of parks because of budget cuts.
In February, wildlife images worker Cindy Manu found a bald eagle comatose and barely breathing. Manu said, quote, "When I held it in my arms, its head flopped down and its wings just sagged. When I put it in a cage, I thought it had expired," unquote. The eagle had been nearly poisoned to death by lead and fertilizer. It recovered and it's due for release today. But really, why do we keep poisoning ourselves and our fellow creatures?
Here's why. By sampling clouds and making their own, researchers at the Department of Energy's Pacific Northwest National Laboratory in Richland, Washington, had shown for the first time a direct relation between lead in the sky and the formation of ice crystals that foster clouds. The results suggest that lead generated by human activity causes clouds to form at warmer temperatures and with less water. This could alter the pattern of both rain and snow in a warmer world. And we know this because an assortment of governmental agencies have been playing with the weather for decades.
Jamestown, North Dakota is bracing for massive flooding over the next few days. Jamestown is just the latest North Dakota community to face a flood threat this spring. Local officials say they're completing a precautionary evacuation plan for low-lying areas in case dikes fail along the James River.
And, of course, a new report out just yesterday. There's not as much water flowing through the world's largest rivers as there was half a century ago. And researchers suspect climate change is the reason. Water flowing into the Pacific Ocean was down about 6%. Which is about equal to shutting off the Mississippi River. The only area showing a significant increase in flow was, wait for it, the Arctic, where warming conditions are increasing the snow and ice melt.
Governor Kulongoski is at the start of an interesting legislative session. Kulongoski has set expanding state health care coverage to include 80,000 more kids and 75,000 more low-income adults as a top priority. To pay for the program, the governor has proposed a provider tax on health insurers and hospitals. However, representatives of health insurers and hospitals haven't agreed on the details of that tax. A committee vote on House Bill 2009 could come next week.
And the National League of Cities picked Portland as a site of its first ever Green Cities Conference and Expo. President Kathleen Novak said that in part it's because the city is a national leader in a field that's only going to grow. Governor Ted Kulongoski welcomed the group and boasted about the steps Oregon has taken to embrace green technologies and ways of living. But with Oregon still considering liquefied natural gas terminals and pipelines, as well as a 12-lane superbridge, the Wizard of the Emerald State is looking smaller every day.
Yesterday, the Oregon House unanimously endorsed the Dungeness crab as Oregon's official state crustacean. The bill was introduced at the request of the fourth graders at Sunset Primary School in West Lynn. The bill still faces approval by the Senate and the governor.
A Brooks company, AgriPlus, is turning waste plastics back into oil. A process developed by Oregon State University graduate Kevin DeWitt burns the plastics at 1,100 degrees. The released gases are condensed to produce oil. Two questions. How much energy does it take to produce this oil? And is it really a good idea to reinvent fossil fuels?
Oregon Health and Science University is joining the University of Washington to create a regional biodefense center to protect against emerging or re-emerging infectious diseases that pose a serious threat. Health officials say the nation needs to keep expanding its ability to detect and combat infectious diseases, whether they're spread naturally or through a bioterrorist attack.
And finally, this, drivers of all, from the regional news department, drivers of all ages would be prohibited from texting or talking on a handheld cell phone under a bill approved in committee yesterday. Oregon House Bill 2377 would allow police to stop any driver caught with a phone. One can still, of course, eat breakfast, shave, apply makeup, and practice the trumpet while driving, all of which I personally witnessed.
A federal report says the U.S. government will loan GM up to $5 billion more to make it through May, and Chrysler LLC could get up to $500 million more by the end of the month. GM already has received $13.5 billion in government loans, and Chrysler has received $4 billion. And all because the people receiving ridiculous salaries for making decisions made all the wrong ones.
For the first time, an accused domestic terrorist is being added to the FBI's list of most wanted terror suspects. Daniel Andreas Sandiego, computer specialist from Berkeley, California, is wanted for the 2003 bombings of two corporate offices in California. Authorities describe Sandiego as an animal rights activist who turned to bomb attacks and says that he has a tattoo that proclaims it only takes a spark. Sandiego would be the 24th person on the list and the only domestic so-called terror suspect. I can see the name of the television program. It'll be America's Top Terrorist.
Britain says it will review all weapons exports to Israel following the country's recent war on Hamas in the Gaza Strip. The move comes amid pressure from British lawmakers who had demanded that the UK weapons not be used against Palestinians.
Civil liberties groups are renewing calls for the Obama administration to change screening at border posts by limiting questions about Americans' political beliefs and religious practices and establishing a process for U.S. citizens and residents who are mistakenly included on terrorist watch lists to clear their names. In a report out yesterday, the Asian Law Caucus of San Francisco cited evidence of a much wider pattern of profiling and discrimination at U.S. borders. Amina Rubin joins us with the Council on American Islamic Relations. Good morning, Amina. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Talk a little bit about the sort of questions that Muslim people are often subjected to. For example, if a woman is wearing a veil, she might be asked what, for
example? Well, I mean, we've gotten dozens and dozens of reports from Muslims all over the country, and the border issues are definitely escalating. They are asked questions from anything ranging from their political beliefs to religious practices. How often do you pray? What do you pray about? What kind of charitable causes they support? Even personal things like how's your marriage? Who are your friends? These kinds of questions that really don't have much to do or have, you know, nothing to do with why they're traveling. And the real concern is that these people are stopped without evidence or even suspicion that the travelers have engaged in wrongdoing, but merely on the basis of their ethnic background or religion.
When these things happen, what recourse do people have?
Well, I mean, we and other organizations, you mentioned the Asian Law Caucus, and also there's a group called Muslim Advocates that has recently released a similar report. And we're all working and hoping to, we're looking at the laws and seeing, is this actually legal? Do we need to be, asking the government to review their laws, or is this kind of a rogue questioning that's happening? Another issue that's very concerning is detention of equipment, and that's actually what they call it. We're going to detain your computer, and computers, phones, digital cameras, even credit card numbers can be kept basically indefinitely. And so we've had, a student will come back from traveling over the summer, and they try to go back to school, and then their computer is gone. And some of them receive it many months later. Some of them never get them back. So that's a whole other issue in the same category.
Are there clearly defined laws that permit the government to adopt these incredibly invasive procedures? And if so, what kind of is there a legal defense effort going on? What recourse really do they have? Can you challenge it in court?
Well, we do challenge it, and one of the best ways to challenge it is just by making it public, because when people hear these kinds of things and they see how unreasonable it is, often public pressure will have more influence than law. But a lawsuit is not out of the question. And there have been cases of people who have sued for just the experience or to get back their belongings.
It seems that there's a degree of deliberate intimidation here. When people have spoken to you about their experiences, how have they said they've been treated?
Well, I mean, we have so many specific cases, and some of them is just astonishing what it is that triggers this. I remember one case of a man who was a 20-year veteran of the National Guard. He was a veteran of Operation Desert Storm. He's now a firefighter. And he wrote some letters to the editor for a local paper about U.S. Middle East policy. And right after he wrote that, he started having problems. He lives in Michigan, and he would travel to Canada to visit family. And every time at the border, he would be stopped, searched, even to the point of strip search. And at one point, the agents brought in the newspapers with his letter to the editor, and they started questioning him about that. And something like that is just extremely concerning to us, because a letter to the editor is almost the epitome of the right to free speech, and yet this is causing these troubles for someone who's an upstanding citizen like that.
Amina, thank you so much for that. I've been speaking with Amina Rubin with the Council on American Islamic Relations. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Tuesday, April 21st, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director, Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thanks for listening and have a good day.